We are back on Get Up and a little Rise and Shine. Let's all enjoy 13-year-old Matthew DeJaney of Atlanta punting the ball over his house and banking it in. Take another look at this. I don't care if that took 1,000 takes. That's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. That's extremely well done. Humans are phenomenal. The enthusiasm is magnificent. We are so delighted that you have chosen to get up with us today. I'm Greeny live in Bristol, and we have a huge hour coming your way on a very busy sports morning on a Thursday. Here we go. It is time to get up with the great debate. Did they get the top 10 NBA players right? One of my guys says one of these guys was way underappreciated. Jalen and Stephen A. will weigh in. Then, are these two superstars ready for their close-up? We'll tell you why they are the faces of football starting right now. And with Tom in Tampa, what about the team he left behind? We've got two Patriots live to tell us why the dynasty doesn't have to stop now. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now with Get Up and Go. The NFL virtual offseason was supposed to run through May 15th. However, the league has now informed teams that it's extending that program through the end of the month. There is no set date for reopening team facilities as of yet. Elsewhere, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has announced that his state is open to professional sports teams that want to resume activities. This announcement comes one day after Arizona made a similar announcement, so we'll see if any teams need to relocate, at least for the purposes of working out. Then to the NBA, Celtics guard Jaylen Brown says the consensus among players is they want the season to resume, but not at the expense of the public. Brown was on a recent players-only conference call and talked about that yesterday on CNN.
The most influential players that were on that call that we speak of, a lot of those guys want to continue the season, and that's very important to us. We just want to make sure that it's safe. And as an NBA and as a brand, we want to make sure that you're on par with the science and the research that's being done.
And this brings us to college football and our top story today, where still no official decisions on the status of the season have come, and so many different possibilities are being discussed. Earlier this morning, Alabama's athletic director Greg Byrne was a guest on Golic and Wingo. Here's what he had to say.
The goal is to collectively, work together as the enterprise of college football, the enterprise of college sports, and then pay attention to what the medical experts are saying. Take what you have at the national level, bring that down to the conference level for the SEC. And then obviously we have our own campuses and communities, like you mentioned. And so trying to balance all those three things right now, till May 31st, we can't have any athletic activities, organized athletic activities. Once June 1st comes along, we're going to have another discussion about what that looks like for our conference.
So much of this continues to fly around, and Paul Feinbaum is back, Laura's back, and Jonathan Vilma has joined our conversation for the first time today. And Laura, obviously, that's SEC country. You and Paul know that so well. We're going to get to the Pac-12 in a minute, but since we heard from Greg Byrne, what were you hearing from the schools down there yesterday with these moves? We got the Florida governor talking about, let the professional teams come on down here. What are you hearing from around that part of the country with regard to the college game?
Yeah, they're still proceeding as if they can try and have some sort of normal football season. And I say normal, basically talking about the new normal. So obviously things will be a little bit different. But Greg Byrne, who I spoke to last week, the Alabama athletic director you just heard there, said that they're planning to have football season start on time and then to have fans in the stands as normal, to be open as they would imagine otherwise, not even practicing necessarily social distancing unless they are told that that's the best way to do it. They, of course, are being consulted by many medical experts in all of this. And then Florida is in a even more different scenario where they could see gyms opening in the state in the next couple of weeks. And so Dan Mullen, Florida's head coach, said that he thinks that means maybe they'll be able to open their weight room sooner than they might have thought otherwise, which means then they can have players back on campus. That is the discussion in at least that part of the country as far as the SEC goes, and maybe even some ACC schools as well. It's so regional in all of this. And at this point, Greeny, they're not really worried about some places having a competitive advantage over others. It's just how can we bring football back sooner rather than later?
Paul, I'm told that Greg Byrne also said this morning that he anticipates, as of now, that the game between Alabama and USC, scheduled for September 5th, will be played as scheduled. What is your belief as far as that game?
that game's not going to be played. And I understand why he has to say that, Greeny, because no one wants to say something absolute like right now. We saw what happened in California the other day. So it's hard for me to believe that if the county of Los Angeles is going to be shut down for the next couple of months, that Southern Cal is going to be ready to play that game. And quite frankly, I don't think Clay Helton wants to play the game anyway, because he's going to get run over badly. But what this comes down to really is an issue of safety in politics. It's just like the debate going up and down the dial about reopening the economy. Some states want to do it quickly. Some want to pause. It's the same issue in college athletics, and especially in football, where money is driving this conversation. A couple of weeks ago, nobody wanted to play without fans. Nobody wanted to play without students on campus. Now, suddenly, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people are moving in that direction because the overriding issue here is that if college football does not happen this fall, a lot of these university athletic departments are going to go broke.
Let me get John Vilma into the conversation here. And John, because I covered your whole career, I still think of you as a player sometimes. If you were a player in college football right now, what sorts of questions would you be asking? What would be your concerns about the possibility of playing this year?
I'd want to know where the NCAA stands on California saying that they're not having any public gatherings and schooling. Where does the NCAA, who is supposed to be governing all of college athletics, where are they on this topic? Where is their stance right now? You know, this is a perfect opportunity for the NCAA to take a stand and to show their leadership, because if I'm a player, if I want to transfer, if I want to sit out because I'm not comfortable playing, either way, I'm going to have to file something, some sort of paperwork, and it's going to be sent over to the NCAA for their approval. So I need to know where they stand on everything that's going on, and I would love for them, the NCAA, to come out and be vocal about where they are in the process, how far along they are in the process. If such and such happens as far as states opening schools back up, then these schools are allowed to play, or if they're going to say, a clean sweep of no schools are going to be allowed to play, or it's going to be regional. Like, I need to know from the governing body, who I'm eventually, as a player, I'm going to eventually have to deal with in order to be able to play, in order to be able to transfer, in order to be able to have my eligibility.
Well, let's use the word transfer here. And Laura, let me come back to you, because in the notes, and we're considering the possibilities, particularly out west in the Pac-12, where the Cal State school system has already announced that they will not have their students on campus in the fall. You used two words in the notes this morning as far as something we could start to see with regard to players coming east.
Yeah, and this is something that the NCAA, to John's point, and, you know, that has been discussed throughout all of this, would absolutely hate to see. It's the words that were told to me by a coach that said, look, we could see a mass exodus of players trying to just find an opportunity to play. And this doesn't just apply to the Pac-12. This could apply within a conference, let's say, that has eight schools that can play and the rest that can't because of state restrictions. So you may see some of these players look to transfer, and that is being discussed right now. Now, it's a long way away from happening. I want to make that clear. But here's how it looks as far as transfer rules are in place right now for immediate eligibility, because that's the key here. This doesn't make any sense unless you can be immediately eligible to play. And you can see on there, I think the most important piece of these rules right now, as the NCAA has them, is that you would have to receive some sort of waiver from the school and permission from the school that you are currently at in order to go to a different place. And that just seems like it would be far-fetched at this point for that to happen. I can't imagine that, you know, just to use an example right here, that Chip Kelly at UCLA is going to say, yeah, sure, my star players can go and play, you know, somewhere in the ACC. They can go join Clemson at any time. That's something that just doesn't feel like it could happen. But as this continues to develop, who knows? And it has been brought up by many coaches on both sides of this, saying, wait a second, I don't want to lose any of my players. And then some other coaches saying, well, wait a second, what if we do see a scenario where some of our team gets infected with the virus, and then we're looking at trying to still continue to play? Who knows what that would even look like? But would we see expanded rosters? And how could transfers help, at least in that capacity? All of this is being thrown around. They're trying to keep safety as the foremost thing. But as we all know, money is a big factor in this, too.
Now, Paul, in so many different ways, I think a lot of us are coming to terms with just the enormity of the event that we are living through. And sometimes you focus on the day-to-day impact it's having on your life. And every now and again, I find myself stepping back and saying, wow, this is going to have an impact on our lives going forward that I think I haven't fully considered. How do you think, or what do you envision the impact of it on college football looking like?
I think you're 100% correct, Greeny. And you know, we sit here and debate which professional team or which college football program should come back, but this is a much bigger issue. This is an issue facing the entire world. And I think that's why this is such a difficult debate. And I really don't think we're going to know for a while. I know every time we talk to a conference commissioner or an AD, they say, well, mid-May, now June, now we need to know by middle of June. This could go on for a couple of more months because I don't think they really know. Laura made a great point a minute ago. There are so many complications. I talked to a leading epidemiologist yesterday, and he said unless there are three or four criterium, especially testing, it's almost impossible to get a college football team on the field. And that goes for every other sport as well.
Now, John, let me give you the final word here. As you listen to this conversation, you cover the sport, you played the sport your whole life. What are your thoughts as you listen to all the things that are being thrown around right now?
You know, I want to see that the state of California makes a better effort to try everything in their possible power to make sure that the athletes can play, to make sure that schools can be open, to make sure that there are public gatherings. And I say that because there are so many other schools that are using this time 24/7 to figure out, all right, what can happen? How can we make it happen? As opposed to just taking the lazy route and saying, all right, you know what? Scratch it. We don't want anything to happen. We're done with it. You know, try to get back to normalcy. That's what everyone's trying to do. So take some effort to do that. And then if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
All right, guys. Thank you so much again. This is something that feels like it changes every single day. We stay on top of it for you here every morning as best we can. Meanwhile, coming up on Get Up as we continue, the NFL's a quarterback league. You'll hear why Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are in position to dominate the position for a long time. And then in ESPN.com's rankings of the top 10 players of all time, Kobe was 9, Shaq was 10. Do Stephen A. and Jalen think they got those right? We'll find out as we discuss it later this morning. Here, we're getting up with you on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are the two favorites to win the NFL's MVP award this year, and they may be battling it out for many years to come as this season marks the dawning of a new era in the AFC.
It is now official. Tom Brady will be leaving the New England Patriots. He will be playing his career elsewhere.
Let's all agree on at least one thing. The rest of the teams in the AFC will not be sad to see Tom Brady go. The last time a healthy Brady failed to win the AFC East was 2002. He led the Patriots to the AFC Championship game 13 times in the last 19 seasons. He won it 9 times. We may never see again one quarterback dominate an entire conference for nearly 2 decades. So with Tom in Tampa, the question is, who will take over the AFC for, let's say, the next decade? Well, a good place to start might be with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
We do it for the glory. One chance to win the crown.
Behind Jackson, the Ravens set the NFL single season rushing record and ran their way to the number one overall seed in the AFC last year. Jackson was the youngest quarterback ever to win MVP. The 2018 MVP, Mahomes, of course, just led the Chiefs to becoming the first in NFL postseason history to win 3 straight games after trailing by 10 or more points.
The best play yet of Patrick Mahomes' career!
And capped it by being named MVP of Super Bowl 54. The dawning of the young gun quarterback era in the AFC has arrived. We'll see if either of them can leave a Brady-sized mark in the years to come. And with that thought in mind, let's come back to some more or less here, some prop bets looking ahead. And Damian Woody, I'm coming to you on Patrick Mahomes. More or less 4,550 passing yards.
Greeny, I'm going more here. You're talking about a guy who basically had the same passing characters back. Got one of the premier play callers, Andy Reid, at his disposal. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman in second year. Sammy Watkins. And oh, by the way, they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round of running back position. He's going to have a big year.
Tim, let me come to you here, Tim Hasselbeck. More or less 935.5 rushing yards for Lamar Jackson.
I'm going to go less. I think 176 carries with what he had a year ago. I think they need to run him less. He also averaged nearly 7 yards per carry a year ago. Even if he has the same number of carries and averages 5.3 yards per rush, he still doesn't reach that benchmark. I think they need to develop him as a passer. I think that's the plan in Baltimore.
Let me go to another AFC superstar. Bobby, more or less 7 touchdown catches for Odell Beckham Jr.
Life's too short to go with less, Greeny. I'm going more. Odell Beckham Jr. having a huge year, not just because of what, you know, Baker Mayfield I think can become, but because of Kevin Stefanski and what he can do with that offense. Thielen and Diggs over the last 3 seasons have had 42 combined touchdowns. I think Odell Beckham Jr. is better than both of those guys. He'll be the deep threat over the top to complement that great play action game.
That's a really interesting one. And Tim Hasselbeck, I haven't had a chance, pardon me, to talk to you about this in a little while. We had a pretty good debate here about a week or so ago about just what exactly is at stake for Baker Mayfield this season. So without prejudicing the conversation at all, I'll ask it to you that directly. What do you believe is at stake for the former number one pick?
Well, I don't think this is necessarily make or break. It's the first year under a new head coach. It's his 3rd year. There's still time for Baker Mayfield. Now, when you're the number one overall pick, expectations are high. People believe there's a lot of talent on that football team. But, okay, it's been a bad organization. They're coming off of a 6-win season. So I think there can be some improvement, but I'm not exactly sure that they are a playoff team this season, much, you know, and people were picking them to be a playoff team last season. So I think they'll be improved. I think the operation will be cleaned up under Kevin Stefanski, but I don't think this is necessarily like, hey, all of a sudden the Browns are now, you know, one of the teams to beat in the AFC.
Well, it's interesting. So last year, maybe we were all overrating them. Now, maybe are we underrating them? D Wood, if you just look at the names on the backs of the jerseys, you would think the Browns should be a really good football team. Do you think they're a playoff team?
No, I do not. And I think it's a credit to 2 other organizations within the AFC North and the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. I always said that when it comes to if we're trying to choose between who's better or not, I'm going with the better head coach, better run organization. And that's why I picked those two ball clubs. Listen, Cleveland Browns have all the names that you could possibly think of. They've addressed the offensive line. They got 2 stud running backs. They got wide receivers. They got a guy on the defensive side of the ball that's a defensive MVP candidate. All of that means nothing if you don't have the right culture, the right coach in place to make everything happen. And that's really the big question in Cleveland. Do they have the culture and do they have the coach to have the Browns make a jump into the playoffs? I don't think this is going to happen this year.
Well, Bobby Carpenter, for those who don't know, you host a sports radio talk show in Columbus. I'm sure you take a lot of calls and have a lot of conversations about the Browns. What are the fans' expectations for them this year?
I think the fans are very optimistic. They really like Kevin Stefanski and what he was able to do in that Minnesota offense and get the most out of Kirk Cousins. The reason for Baker Mayfield why it's so critical is this is his 4th coach in his 3rd season. And so if you look at it, he's not going to be able to get to a 5th coach. If they end up moving on from Stefanski because they haven't had success, a lot of that's going to fall at the feet of Baker Mayfield. He has everything that he needs to be successful. And so this is his opportunity to become the franchise quarterback in Cleveland. If not, he could be going down the road of Alex Smith, who's a great quarterback who played really well in his career. But if you look early on, he has Mike Nolan, he has Mike Singletary, Jim Tomsula, then Jim Harbaugh, and they're ultimately trying to find a way to get rid of him. And you just don't ever get a chance to settle in and become that guy for the franchise. And so if Baker can't do that with Kevin Stefanski this year, he's probably never going to have that opportunity again.
I get it. But Bob, when you say the fans are optimistic, what exactly does that mean? Will they be satisfied if this team isn't in the playoffs this year?
Greeny, the Cleveland fans have been pessimistic for so long. It was bound to turn at some point. Last year, I think it was a little bit too much. It's with I think they're right on the cusp, man. This is a 9-7 team. I don't know if they can get to 10-6. And the problem is, like Woody said, you have Lamar Jackson and 14-2 Ravens from last year. And if Ben is healthy, Pittsburgh is a real threat. But that is another big concern. How good is Ben Roethlisberger going to be after a year off?
All right, we'll talk more about this as we continue. But I have to get to something here because there was some controversy last night in case you missed it. In the UFC, last night in Jacksonville, Glover Teixeira scored a fifth-round TKO over Anthony Smith in the main event. Smith suffered a broken nose, a broken orbital bone, and had two teeth knocked out. Our analyst, Chael Sonnen, was not happy the fight was not stopped earlier, and he said so when he was on with Ariel Helwani after the match.
What is the corner there for? If you're not there to protect your guy, two 10-8 rounds in a row, which, by the way, would have been three 10-8 rounds in a row, which has never been done in the history of the sport because it means you got to get your guy out of there. I cannot believe that nobody saved him. He gave every clue that he was done. He had too much pride to get himself out of there. I think we can appreciate that, Ariel, but he's giving every clue. Get me home. You don't stop the fight when your fighter can no longer move. You stop the fight when your fighter can no longer win. That was 12 minutes ago. If I am a fighter and you ask me if I'm okay and I do not answer the question, I am giving you an answer while hanging on to my pride.
That's a frustrated Chael Sonnen after last night's event. Coming up, it's the third UFC event in Jacksonville this week, and it's available on ESPN and the ESPN app. Alistair Overeem taking on Walt Harris Saturday in the main event. The main card starts at 9 Eastern with a great preliminary card starting at 6 on ESPN. All right, coming up, it's been a rough offseason for the Patriots. Tom Brady gone. Gronk gone. We'll ask a pair of Pats why New England still has hope. But first, a little sneaky hembo time for our guests. The McCourty twins, who are coming up next, have combined to intercept which quarterback the most times? That's the question. We'll see if they know the answer. Next, Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social Security. Is that a thing? Hey, Mom. What is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and let's talk about the New England Patriots. Obviously, the big storyline here is the departure of Tom Brady, who went to Tampa after 20 magnificent seasons in New England. He's the first player in history to change teams after spending 20 years with one franchise, and that opens up the quarterback job, where it's projected that Jarrett Stidham will take over. He's in his second year now. He attempted 4 passes last year as a rookie. And, of course, the head coach, the legendary Bill Belichick, will be without Brady for the first time this century. Belichick has won 273 regular season games. Only 54 of those have come without Brady as his starting quarterback. And that's going to bring us to a little sneaky hembo time this morning because the McCourty twins are ready to go with us live here, Devin and Jason. And, guys, the question this morning is about you. The McCourty twins have combined to intercept which quarterback the most times. What do you think?
I'm going Fitzmagic.
You agree?
I'm going to go, just so we don't have the same answer, I think it is Fitz, but I'm going to go Roethlisberger.
Okay, well, and never talk yourself, never disagree with your brother. Ryan Fitzpatrick is the correct answer.
There we go.
They have combined to intercept Fitzmagic 6 times, 5 by Devin, 1 by Jason. Ben Roethlisberger would have been next. You guys picked him off 4 times, Joe Flacco 4 times, and Mark Sanchez 3 times. And with that, we welcome in Devin and Jason McCourty. And we were just talking during the break as we were setting this up. I'm always fascinated by the thing with the twins because my wife is an identical twin. What is the coolest thing about being twins in your mind? Devin McCourty, what's the best thing about being a twin?
I always got someone to argue with, and really makes me better at arguing because I usually win probably 95% of the time. Please.
Jason, the thing that I found fascinating is that, did you say one of you can open each other's phone with the facial recognition and the other one cannot?
Yeah, for some reason, Dev can't open mine, but I can pull his phone up, look at it, and next thing you know, it's unlocked and I'm in there.
Okay. So, I mean, you got that up on. I don't know if you keep secrets and he can't. I like it. Anyway, guys, thank you for doing this. Let me come to you here, Devin, on this, because obviously the huge change in New England this offseason. How does the role of a veteran leader change in an organization when an iconic figure like Tom Brady leaves?
I think one of the key things, you just got to be yourself, man. You know, obviously, Tom is a huge figurehead in our organization. He's been there 20 years. But I think it'll just be more veteran guys. You know, I think guys like Julian, who haven't got a ton of credit for his leadership, he's a guy who will step up. Guys like James White and David Andrew, who have been captains, they'll continue to lead. But I think the biggest thing is we just got to be ourselves. We can't try to fill Tom's gap because we can't do that. But it'll be a new kind of regime, a new team. We got to embrace that and have fun with it.
Jason, what was the first thought you had when you heard Tom wasn't coming back?
Oh, man. I guess just happy for him if that's where he wants to be. I think at the end of the day, we always have to remember this thing is a business and it doesn't always go the way we anticipate or the way we expect it. But for a guy that spent 20 years in one place and to do as much winning as he did, he deserves the right to make whatever decision he feels is best for him and his family.
You know, Devin, I saw you had some comments where you were very supportive of Jarrett Stidham, and obviously you guys will rally around him. What do you think will be the single biggest challenge for him as he tries to step into these enormous footsteps?
I think like any quarterback, man, just experience. You know, for every player, when you first get out there, every snap is a new learning experience. And the biggest thing is repetition, and you keep doing it over and over again. So he'll be no different than, you know, any other quarterback that'll go out there, whether it's first year, second, third year, even our new rookies that come in. You know, every snap will be a new learning experience. You got to kind of take it all in and just keep pushing forward. So no matter the ups or downs, we just need to stay, or it's Hoyer or anybody that plays quarterback for us, to just keep going out there and know you got the full team support behind you.
Yeah, for both of you guys, I wonder if you're watching the Last Dance films on ESPN, because it has brought up a lot of conversation about Michael Jordan, and in particular this week, how tough he was on his teammates as a leader. And it just got me to thinking, I mean, Tom Brady and Michael Jordan have so many parallels. They both won six championships. They're both, you know, at the very top of the list of the greatest players in their sport. How do you see it? How would you describe the way Tom Brady was as a leader relative to what we've seen from Michael Jordan in these films?
You'd be more equipped for that. Yeah, I think football's a little different than basketball. You know, you got five guys on the court at one time. Everyone's kind of working together. Whereas, you know, Tom's always been the guy offensively. Like, the offense revolves around him. There's not been, you know, days where if it's not going well, Tom's going to be quiet. Like, there's been plenty of days, whether it's springtime and mini camp, OTAs, or training camp, where he's mad, he's firing guys up. So to me, he's always been one of those guys that leads by example. But when it's not to the standard, he's always going to let guys know what they need to do to get better. But I just think it's a little different, football and basketball.
It makes some sense. Jason, for those of us who follow you guys on social media, you have some accounts that you share and all the rest of that, and you comment on a variety of different things. I wonder, as we sort of sit in the middle of these unique circumstances, what your thoughts are on the return of football and your anticipation of what it's going to be like when you guys are able to get back on the field.
One thing I really believe in is control what you can control. And I think for us as players, there's a lot of unknown right now. And all we can do right now is staying in shape. Everybody's doing the virtual meetings and things of that nature. So obviously we're all assuming and we're hoping that football will restart. And at some point we'll be able to return to the facilities when it's safe to do so. But I feel like in the meantime, we all have no idea what the future is going to bring, when that's going to be. So we're just doing all that we can to make sure whenever it does happen, we're all ready to go and we hit the ground running.
And once upon a time, both of you guys, of course, were college football players. And I think that we've been talking a lot on this show about the different challenges that they face in all of that. Devin, what are your thoughts on college football, where the possibility that the players will be back on campus, if some of the other regular students aren't back on campus, maybe they'll be playing, but it's not safe for fans in the stands? Feels that there's a big difference between dealing with professionals and dealing with amateur athletes, if you will, on the collegiate level. What are your thoughts on that, Devin?
Yeah, man, it's tough. You know, I think as professionals, we can make some decisions. We understand what's going on. When you're in college, the biggest thing is you want to go out there and compete. And, you know, a lot of those guys have dreams and aspirations of playing in the NFL. So, you know, to do that, you have to go play. So, you know, I think for years, you know, the NCAA has gotten a lot of criticism. But I think now is the time. You know, we have so many other sanctions and other silly things. But I think now is the time that they have to make sure they protect the athletes, not protect the business of making money and financial gains, but actually protect these kids and do what's best for them, whether that's playing or not playing. But I think they need to put the kids first and prioritize them before any other financial gains.
And final question, Jason McCourty, this is maybe the most important one because I've had this conversation with Rex a million times, who is a twin as well. Who is the handsomer McCourty twin?
by far me. It's never been a close race.
What do you think, Devin?
He was the first one to get married because he knew he had to get off the market. So I think that answers for itself.
Guys, this was great fun. Thank you so much. Please stay safe, and I hope that we'll see you back on the field really soon. Thank you for doing this morning.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having us.
All right, there they are, the McCourty twins, Devin and Jason. Lots of fun there. Meanwhile, tonight will be fun. Throwback Thursday with an all-time great college football game. It's number one Miami and number 12 Florida State. It's the famous wide left game from 2002. Canes-Noles at the Old Orange Bowl, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, don't miss this coming up next. You got LeBron. You got Michael. Who is the best? Who should be number one? Jalen and Stephen A. weigh in right after this. Don't miss it. Get up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security. Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and it is time for the main event. Because yesterday, as you have seen, ESPN.com put out its list of the top 10 NBA players of all time, and here they are. Michael, LeBron, Kareem, Russell, Magic, it's the One Names Club, Wilt, Larry, Duncan, Kobe, and Shaq. That was their top 10. It, of course, invites everyone to debate with their top 10 and whatever it is they want to pick out about it. We've been waiting all morning to say good morning, Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith. Steve is 18 minutes away from First Take. So, Jalen, I'm going to give you the first crack at this. What is the one thing on the list you most want to address?
How LeBron James leapfrogged to number two. When you start talking about all-time greatness, you start splitting hairs amongst these great players. And I'm going to name four guys on my Mount Rushmore that have achieved more, accomplished more than LeBron James, that have been more dominant. Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell. All of those guys have things that LeBron James hopes to achieve. And then finally, I know he has a chance to win a championship with the Lakers. And if he does so, he will surpass this guy. But when did LeBron pass Magic Johnson? Am I missing something? I know he made 9 finals in 17 years. Magic made 9 in 12 years. I know LeBron has 3 championships. Magic has 5. Magic is the NBA's all-time leader in assists. And he was a freak of nature as the only 6'9 point guard in the history of basketball. Oh, yeah, the greatest to ever play that position, Irvin Magic Johnson. So those are the things that jumped out to me, Greeny, when I saw this list.
So it's interesting because Stephen A., as we look at Jalen's list there, but let me come to you, Steve, on that topic. Because I had Kendrick Perkins earlier this morning, and the argument he wanted to make was that he believes LeBron should be number one. Jalen is moving him down further. Where do you stand?
I stand with LeBron James as number two, just his versatility, what he does over the course, what he's done over the course of 17 years, playing 82 games, not all 82 games, of course, but to carry the load that he has carried, to be the facilitator that he is, to be a career 27-point-per-game scorer, to go to 9 NBA finals in this era, although he lost 6 and won 3. And I'm thinking about his all-around versatility as a player. I'm not denying what Jalen is pointing to in terms of points, in terms of production, in terms of championships on the part of a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, 11 championships in 13 years. We get all of that. But I'm not just looking at championships, obviously. I'm looking at all-around ability. I think when you look at Magic Johnson, as phenomenal and great as he was, and the orchestrator of Showtime, the greatest show, as far as I'm concerned, that we have ever seen in the history of basketball, the reality is that as an individual talent, Magic Johnson didn't compare to LeBron James in terms of individual talent. But Jalen, I want to say this to you because I want to give you an opportunity to just crash and crush my world. I'm about to say something on Get Up that is blasphemous, that is sacrilegious, but I just want to pose this question. Since we are going by championships, Jalen Rose, why is Wilt Chamberlain on this list? He played in the same era. He's a career 30-point-per-game scorer on 54% shooting. He's the most dominant force most people have ever seen in their lifetime. He was clearly perceived as the most dominant force before Shaq and even ahead of Shaq in some people's eyes, obviously. But I ask a sincere question. When Bill Russell was winning all of those championships, wasn't it supposed to be Wilt Chamberlain that was standing in his way? And if Wilt Chamberlain, with Jerry West and others as teammates, still forfeited all of those championships to Bill Russell, why should Wilt Chamberlain be in our top 10? Damn. It's just a question. I know it's blasphemous, but I'm asking.
It's definitely blasphemous, and I don't go only by championships. If that's the case, then Bill Russell would be number one. I go by a couple of things.
One.
Number one, more spectacular. That's just an eye test. To me, that's Michael Jordan. The second thing is more dominant. On defense, nobody in the history of the game is more dominant than Bill Russell. And then when you talk about achievement, no players have achieved more than Kareem, Russell, and then my next guy, Magic. And then I'm going to get to your question now.
Mm-hmm.
Wilt Chamberlain is the most dominant force that the game has seen. I know a lot of young fans feel that that's Shaquille O'Neal, but Wilt Chamberlain averaged 50 points and 25 rebounds in a season. And you know what else he did in the season, Stephen A? Led the league in assists. He was going up against one of the greatest dynasties in the history and came up short with Jerry West on his squad. It's true.
I want to emphasize before we get off the air, Greeny and Jalen, is that Jalen's absolutely right. I agree with you. But the reason why I pose that question is because on too many occasions when we're judging the modern day player against them is what they did or did not, or actually what they didn't do in big moments, particularly compared to great talent. So as in other words, there's a Hall of Fame, but there's certain rooms and certain floors that people belong on compared to others. We've done stuff like that, but we've never done it with Wilt Chamberlain, who religiously lost to Bill Russell. All I'm saying is that those are the kind of things. Sonny Hill or somewhere in Philadelphia wanting to throw water on me for crying out loud for being so blasphemous with what I'm saying. I totally agree with you. I'm there. I just felt the question needed to be asked because of how we judge the modern day player. If we're going to judge the modern day player that way, didn't Wilt come up short as dominant as he was? He only has two rings.
Stephen A., let me ask you a different
question.
You know
I love Sonny Hill, who represents Detroit just like you do. And let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
For a guy like LeBron James, he still has more to achieve to me, Greeny, in order to be the second greatest player in the history of basketball. I just think it's short-sighted for people who have a wealth of knowledge to allow him to leapfrog certain people that he has not achieved what they've achieved. Has not been as dominant as have they been dominant. Stephen A., you can go points, rebounds, assists. They all got that. All-star games, they all got that. All NBA, they all got that.
Right.
So here's what I say is difference. When they were at their apex, how dominant were they amongst their peers? Right now, if you look at Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, you see all of these Hall of Fame players that he stopped from literally winning championships. In this era of basketball, LeBron ain't stopping the great players from winning championships. They're getting their turn.
Right.
It wasn't no turn in the 90s. MJ snatched them up.
His dominance was unquestioned. Wow. Okay, Stephen A., can I get one more name in this? Because we're going to run out of time and we've only... The other name that people seem to be reacting to most strongly on social media yesterday was the name Kobe Bryant, who came in at number 9 on this list. I had Bruce Bowen on here an hour ago saying he would put Kobe 2. Bruce's list had Michael 1 and Kobe 2. Do you believe, and of course a lot of the fun is taken out of this part of the conversation considering the circumstances, but we're talking about the careers here. Do you believe that Kobe should have been higher on the list?
No, I do not. And I told, you know, listen, God rest his soul. When Kobe was alive, he and I talked about this. I didn't even consider him top five. I definitely considered him top 10, but not top five. But here's the ultimate indictment. Anytime you think of Kobe Bryant, you think of Michael Jordan and how he came behind Michael Jordan. And so as a result, you have somebody that played his position that is clearly in front of him. And I think ultimately what will forever be held against Kobe Bryant was that he separated from Shaquille O'Neal. All of that plays into it because instead of five titles, he might have had seven or eight titles had they stayed together. People look at that and they say that comes into the equation as well. Sure, you proved that you could win without Shaq, but you could have been on the floor doing your thing. But also you two, both you and Shaq, could have worked better together as teammates and made sure that you kept that bond tight and together as opposed to severing it. I think that gets held against Kobe, and that's why he falls out of the top five.
Quick thought, Jalen, go.
And for me, I have Kobe higher on my list. I think I had him at seven. Five of the 10 players to me, LeBron for the top five can go either way depending on your opinion. And then when you go 6 through 10, the other four guys are basically your taste. Kobe Bryant, Larry Bird, Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal. That 6 through 10, people going to always question. And frankly, if you're going 11 and 12, for me, you got to get Hakeem Olajuwon and Oscar Robertson in there. As a young basketball fan whose biological father played in a league that I didn't know, trust me, I did a lot of history. I got a lot of basketball cards of trying to figure out who's the greatest of the great. And trust me, LeBron James is on his way, but I ain't ready to put him in front of Magic Johnson yet. I'm just sorry.
Yeah. At some point in this, I think we all fall by generational lines. If my dad was here, he would be screaming at the television, guys, Oscar Robertson was better than any of these guys. I don't care what you say. And that's just kind of the way the world works. Stephen A. in 8 minutes on First Take. Thank you both so much. Great fun. And then a reminder that this coming Monday, we're asking you to get up earlier, and we'll do it with you. We're going to do a special three-hour get up coming off the finale of Last Dance on Sunday night, talking about the impact the great Michael Jordan had and continues to have. That's Monday right here on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and when I woke up this morning, the name Blake Snell was trending, and I wondered why, so I clicked on this video in which he talks about how he will not play this season for a reduced salary. Here's what was posted.
Y'all gotta understand, too, because y'all gonna be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me.
So that was Blake Snell yesterday. This is Jeff Passan, our baseball insider. How should we react to that, Jeff?
Greeny, Blake Snell is making public what a lot of players are saying behind the scenes. Now, certainly part of this is players' efforts to try and cajole the owners and make them know that, hey, money is important to us and we are willing to potentially miss a season because of it. But listen, we're still in the posturing phase. I've been saying this from the start. This week's going to be ugly. You're going to hear things about money. You're going to get angry because it's millionaires and billionaires fighting. That's just the reality of this situation this early on in the process. The big question is, are they willing, most literally, to put their money where their mouth is? Because if Blake Snell is threatening to sit out if he doesn't get his money and they don't get their money, is he actually going to sit out the season? Are the players actually going to miss a season? I still have a really hard time believing that in the end, of the 1,200 guys in the Major League Baseball Players Association, they are willing to throw away a season over a cut of money.
I get it, but there have to be some players who won't want to play, right? Who won't fit, maybe some who are completely financially secure and all the rest of that. Is it too early to know how that will be handled if out of those 1,200 players, 100 of them say, you know what, I'm not coming back and doing it?
Yeah, I think 100, honestly, is on the high side. It's interesting, though, Blake Snell's a pitcher, remember, and pitchers have not been ramped up or warmed up like they normally are. Pitchers are far more prone to injury risk than position players are. And pitchers are the ones who potentially could be suffering the most in terms of long-term damage and consequences. So it's interesting to hear this from a pitcher. Trevor Bauer said something similar yesterday. He is a pitcher as well. Something else to keep an eye on, Greeny. Low salary guys, if they're getting half of what they're supposed to be, you know, say like $300,000, which is half of the minimum. You take taxes out, you're at $180,000. It's a great salary for any American to be making $180,000 right now. And yet when you compare it to the risks going forward, it might make it difficult for some of those younger guys to want to come back.
All right, we'll see. Jeff Passan, well done. Thank you, my man. Good to see you. And we'll continue again. I woke up this morning and the name Blake Snell was trending and I wanted to see why. And that's what it is. Look, there's never been a time I can remember where I think there was less of an appetite on the part of fans to hear people talking about money. We'll see if that continues. And we'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.